columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Football at 4. Here's The Drive with Tyler Palumbus, D-Mac, and Nick Ferguson.
Oh, by the way, on the RamosFlaw.com text line, I thought Ben Garland played defensive tackle for the Broncos.
That is true.
He did. I don't know the whole story why he was converted. Do you know the story behind it?
You know, I don't think I do. I can't. I'm not sure if I was around when he actually made the switch.
Mm. It was pretty early on, but he was initially a defensive player.
But yeah, I can verify that when I played with him for the Broncos, he was a D lineman. When he came to Atlanta, he was an offensive lineman.
He was an offensive lineman for the Broncos too at some point.
Oh yeah, I totally believe that.
But you were.
Gone. I was what?
You weren't here anymore.
Why'd you give the sound? Sure. Like I was, like,
John,
see
Josh
you
today.
Later.
Josh.
Like, call it your boy.
Josh was just like, I've got enough of this guy.
Do your job, Tyler. Just do your job.
Do your job and quit making shit up.
Why was that directed at me?
Have you hashed things out with Josh?
No, I haven't talked to Josh a single time since he...
Are you kidding me?
You never ran into him at the Super Bowl or anything like that?
I've been within like a 15-foot sphere of him multiple times.
Yeah.
And I never went out of my way to go talk to him, no.
Okay. Yeah. Would you want?
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood. Nobody!
Would you want to?
Why would I want that?
I don't
cram
know.
Cram up your cram hole in the floor.
Maybe to mend some fences?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
We heard from Brett Kern. He said he hashed things out with Josh.
That's not a relationship that, like, I'm missing in my life. Like, it's not like it, like, I'm like, man, my life will never be complete unless Josh McDaniels and Tyler Palumbus are just in unison.
Okay.
What if he called
like,
you
I,
up?
I feel like I could, if I died without that relationship ever getting repaired.
You'd be all right.
Like, my life wouldn't have been any different. Yeah.
What if he called you up because he was having one of these road to kind of redemption type of concepts in his life, and he said, well, you know what? I want to talk to Tyler because I feel as though the way that I handled the situation was inappropriate.
Then I tell him to put the red lipstick down and not cross my name off.
Nice.
I'm not going to. So quit asking.
Is that Wedding Singer?
No, that's Billy Madison.
Oh, it's Billy Madison. Sorry. Steve Buscemi. Yeah. I guess I don't need him. You know, it's funny, the connections to Kyle Shanahan, because if Ben was there in Atlanta, he obviously played with Kyle, right? And now Kyle brings him to San Fran, and he's a starting center. And you think of all the ways. We sort of touched on this yesterday, but I want to go through it. I mean, it's not just Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, right?
It's a laundry list of guys.
Adam Peters, VP of Player Personnel. Dustin Little, head athletic trainer. Mike McDaniel, no relation, run game coordinator. Wes Welker, wide receiver coach.
Well, there is a connection with Mike McDaniel. He's a Smoky Hill High School product.
Oh, well, I mean, not when Josh McDaniels. I didn't know he was a Smoky Hill guy.
Yep.
Nice.
We went to school at the same time, and he was coaching with the Redskins
when
I was there, and he would never let me live down the fact that Smoky beat us.
Smoky beat Creek?
Apparently. I don't remember it, but he does.
In
football.
Really?
He claims that they beat us. I don't know.
What year was that?
I don't know. I blacked it out.
Yeah. We give Creek every once in a while in a variety of things.
Once a decade?
It depends what the sport is. Got him in baseball last year.
Yeah.
Got him in basketball. Got him. I can list all the times that Smoky Hill's beaten Creek. Yeah. There's about two more other times. Wes Welker, wide receivers coach. Joe Woods, he's there. John Embry is the tight end coach. Taylor Embry.
His son.
Okay. Nice to okay. Offensive quality coach. Bobby Slowick, offensive assistant. John Benton, O-line coach. Of course, Emmanuel
Sanders.
No, wasn't
Bobby here in Denver?
He was. Yeah.
With his dad.
Well, that's right. I think it was his dad.
No, they were both here, though.
They were both here?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
It wasn't Bobby. It was Ryan.
Oh, right?
Ryan.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. There was a slow kid. Yeah. I know that.
Yes, and then, was. You know, yeah. the one name on that, not on the list.
Bobby Turner.
Who's Bobby Turner's there?
Bobby T.
Oh, yeah. Bobby
yes, he's the running back
there.
Coach.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry. The other guy I was going to throw out there is Mike Shanahan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you have to throw Mike. He's a consultant. He helps out.
How much influence do you think Mike actually has?
Maybe I'll say maybe about 60%. Because because Kyle has questions or Mike McDaniels comes to Kyle and say, listen, how about we try this out? You have to figure that at some point Mike is brought in and say, hey, Dad, you know, what do you think about this? If we run it this way, do you think it'll work? So he's involved in some way. Well, now that 60% may be over the top, but he's definitely involved.
I know this. I've sat in his kitchen. Mike Shanahan's kitchen, mm-hmm. and I've looked at the piles of hard drives of San Francisco 49ers games and everything else. I don't think he's just watching it for fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what his role is.
Yeah,
I don't
what
know.
What do you think the process is?
I don't think that he has a role. I think that he watches it.
And he talks to Kyle.
He has an opinion, and if Kyle calls, he's prepped and he's ready to answer the question, right? Like, I don't think he's necessarily watching film and calling Kyle and mm-hmm. being like, hey, man, you need to do this. That was a bad call. I think it's more like, no, he wants to be aware of everything that is going on right now so he can be of influence. And do I think that Kyle leans on him? Well, he would be dumb not to.
What aspects do you think would be the most valuable that Mike could pass on to Kyle?
Run game. You know, giving his advice as far as what to do with the run game, because the run game opens up the pass. And we watched on Sunday that Jimmy G went 7-for-8 for 77 yards, and Raheem Mostert went for 220 yards on the ground. So this is where, you know, his dad's influence actually comes in. No, he's not telling Kyle what to run. He's just there if you want to lean on me and say, hey, listen, Dad, what would you do in this particular situation? How would you change this up? Being a little more creative. And, you know, Kyle is in the best situation. If I had my dad, who was a Super Bowl winning coach, won back-to-back Super Bowls, I would lean on him too as well. Would you not?
It depends. You know, sometimes kids want to get away from their dad. Sometimes they want to lean on him. It sort of depends. I'm curious too, like, what advice? Well, Kyle's been through a Super Bowl, obviously, with the Falcons, and he's learned some tough lessons in that one, you know, so maybe he doesn't need that sort of advice, but, you know, I don't think he would help.
I think it's like a time management thing.
Yeah.
How do you handle the Super Bowl week?
It's a different thing, isn't it?
It's different. And you've got events going on all day long before and after practice. You know, how did you manage that? And what would you do different type of thing?
I know those Mike Shanahan coach Broncos teams down in Miami, they were having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
They did not have a good time. Those guys, the famous story is they get off the plane and there's like a line of like sports cars all waiting for the guys who had them lined up. And they were, Mike allowed a certain amount of, you know, go have some fun.
A little freedom.
Oh,
you
he
know?
Did.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
But it was always a business trip, though.
Those 2 years, it was unbelievable. They got it done. They got it done. We'll see what happens with the 49ers. When we come back, the Pro Bowl. I saw a video of Pro Bowl practices happening. Who knew? You thought Senior Bowl stuff was boring to watch. But they're doing something at the Pro Bowl that I think should be part of the NFL next year. Details next.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
All guests appear on the Fireball Hotline. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's D-Man, Nick, and Tyler.
You know, I want to give credit where credit's due, and that's to Greg Schiano. He came up with this idea years ago because he realized how dangerous kickoffs were. And in the Pro Bowl, the NFL, who has eliminated kickoffs in 2013 from the Pro Bowl, they're going to experiment with an alternative to onside kicks. Now, for me, this doesn't quite go far enough, but at least to me, it's a step in the right direction. And again, this is the rule. Is that after a field goal or a touchdown, the scoring team can do one of two things. They can give the ball to the other team at the 25-yard line, or the scoring team keeps the ball from their own 25, and now it's 4th and 15. But in this situation, you would only do that if you were to be going for it. And so the way I think this falls a little short is that I just think instead of just giving the ball to the other team, you should just get the ball at your own 25. It's 4th and 15. Most of the times you'll punt. And a punt inherently is a more exciting play than a kickoff. And kicking from your own 25, that punt's going to be returnable unless you just kick it out of bounds.
I suppose. So you're saying just they have to either punt it from the 25 or go attempt a 4th and 15.
Yeah, it's just like it's a play. It's your ball. It's our ball still. We scored. Now it's our ball. It's 4th and 15 from the 25. Do whatever.
Well, I'd actually rather see it the way they've got it set up right now because, you know, to me, if you're getting rid of kickoffs, well, you're getting rid of it because it's an unnecessary, dangerous play. And so let's just get rid of the plays.
It's not that. It's they're getting rid of the onside kick.
Well, it's both. It's both. In this situation, it's both. Mm-hmm. They're getting rid of the kickoff and they are giving a new way to attempt an onside kick. My only other beef with the current setup is 4th and 15 from your own 25. Man, that's extremely punishing. Extremely punishing. I don't mind it being like 4th and 12 or even 4th and 15, but part of the excitement of an onside kick is if you're down 3 points with 30 seconds to go, mm-hmm. if you recover that onside kick, you recover it on their half of the field, basically. You know, like you are in essentially one play away from scoring. So I don't like the fact that if you succeed here, now you've got the ball at the 40.
Would you like it better if it was at the 35?
I would. Yeah, I would.
So now if you convert it, you're at the 50, which is essentially where you're
one.
On
you're one play away from kicking a field goal.
Maybe the best compromise, because you kick off from the 35 now, maybe the best compromise would be the 30-yard line. 4th and 15 would put you at the 45. Theoretically, that's exactly where the ball would be on an onside kick.
Yeah.
Looking at this idea that they're proposing, I like the idea of making the game safer for players. But the idea of saying putting the ball on your 25 and making it a 4th and 15, that's a very difficult play for an offense. Most offensive teams don't have...
What do you think is harder to convert, an onside kick or 4th and 15?
Well, I know what the percentage of onside kick is. I do not know what 4th and 15 is. But I would guess onside kick.
I would err with the onside kick because all
is
you
a
need,
higher percentage.
Why? Because all
no,
you need,
it's harder. It's
oh,
harder.
It's way harder.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, almost triple a harder percentage wise to convert an onside kick than
what's
a 4th and 15.
What's onside kick? It's like 5%, right?
I think it's even lower than that.
Is it?
Yeah, and 4th and 15 is somewhere around 9-10%. Not bad.
Trying
actually.
To recover an onside kick. I mean, there's so many dynamics that play a role, a player factor, and you're being able to do that. You're hoping first you get a great kick. Someone on the opposite team, you know, fumbles the ball or something like that. To me, a lot of those things don't happen because usually when guys line up to recover the ball, those are the best hands team. That's why they call it the hands team. Those are the best guys on the opposing field.
The onside kick, though, it's just a dumb play. It's there's nothing football-y about it. It's lucky.
It's dangerous.
It's dangerous. It's just not a great play. 4th and 15 is exciting. 4th and 15, hey, it's pretty exciting for the Bears when Mitch Trubisky converted on 4th and 18, right? Well,
I will say this as far as exciting goes.
Well, you just brought that up.
It just happened.
You know, I personally would rather just see them get rid of a play altogether for the kickoff so that you don't have to punt it or anything.
But
I will say this. If you're talking about excitement, dude, a punt return is way more exciting than a kickoff return.
Way more exciting.
Way more exciting.
And not as dangerous.
For everybody except one player.
The returner.
The returner is much more dangerous.
I don't know, man. When's the last time you saw a punt returner actually get hurt?
Dude, well, the smart ones don't, but guys
only dumb punt returners get hurt?
Yeah, because they don't fair catch. Yeah, that's what I mean. Because punt returners, dude, when they catch that ball, I mean, there's somebody within 2 to 3 yards of them every single time. On a kickoff return, you've got 25 yards of space when you catch that ball. So, yeah, it's much more dangerous for that guy. But for the other 21 players on the field, much more safe.
Would you implement some form of this rule next year in the NFL?
Yes.
Some form. But not all of it, because I like the idea, once again, of putting the ball at the 25 and forcing the punter to take
the field. Essentially, what you're saying, is it worth even having kickoffs? Really? Let's just start there with whatever it is.
No, you don't have to.
Just get rid of kickoffs.
You can, because every special teams coach.
Who cares, right, about kickoffs?
Do you think Brandon McManus ever let somebody kick a return a kickoff that isn't intentional? If he wants to kick it out of the back of the end zone, he kicks it out of the back of the end zone.
If he wanted to, yeah.
And when he lets somebody return a kick, he kicks it so high,
right,
and he drops it on the 2 yard line.
Talk about a dangerous play, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. So really, a kickoff return is totally pointless.
If you're a special teams coach, you root for this rule, because every special teams coach is trying to get to the 20. Because the idea that if we get to the 20, on average, we will lead the league.
But you should really want to get to the 25, because if you simply... You know, and in college, you can fair catch a kickoff outside of the end zone, and you can take it up to the, well, in college is 20 or 25. I'm not sure.
College is 20, right?
It's 20. But, you know, every time I see a return, so I see this big dramatic return, right? And the guy takes it to the 27-yard line. I'm like, that's a...
Oh, you gained 2 yards.
That's a
good
lot
job.
Of effort for 2 yards. You know, that was incredibly...
Just set the ball at the 25 and just go.
It'd be faster. It'd be quicker. It'd be more entertaining. It would just get the game going.
And let's be honest. Special teams coaches got way too much on their plate. They got to get rid of one of these plays. They've got four particular plays that they could run. And they got to get rid of one of these. It's too much for them.
It absolutely makes the special teams coach job that much easier.
I'm telling you, seeing...
that much easier.
It already should be the easiest job you have.
That was what I was saying.
It's not.
It's not because they make it... so much more difficult than it needs to be. Tom McMahon, if I see Tom McMahon screaming and yelling and his head's about to pop off, you know, during practice again, you know, put a nail through my head. Just calm down. Just simplify everything and you're going to be better off. Returning kickoffs? Listen, I get it. Every now and then they're one breaks, right? Deontay Spencer, I think, was one of the better kickoff return guys.
Yeah, he was good.
For like the 9 kickoffs that he got to return. But it's a ridiculous risky play. I think this is the most... Graciano came up with this idea a long time ago. The Broncos were the ones that were pushing it through the rules committee last year, and it got shot down. Good for the Broncos. And we'll see it... I mean, if anybody really watches the Pro Bowl.
You're not going to watch?
Do you watch?
Who does watch the Pro Bowl?
I watch the Pro Bowl.
Like, come start on. To finish?
Yeah.
I've never met a human being that's ever done that.
Well, you just met one. I watch it.
I guess so. That is an impressive dedication to the game.
You officially have the world's nicest wife. If she is, then you like, okay, honey. Pro Bowl, huh? When's The Bachelor on? Justin Herbert is lashing out a little bit in a Justin Herbert sort of way about his critics. Okay. Take some time and get into Justin Herbert next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's D-Man, Nick, and Tyler.
Ding, 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 ding. Well, the news of the NFL today is that Eli Manning is done as of Friday. He's going to have a press conference on Friday and be done with it. And we'll dig into the legacy of Eli Manning on the way. The Las Vegas Raiders, they're making it official, huh? Is that right, Richard?
Yep, they put it out on their social media today, officially introducing themselves as the Las Vegas Raiders.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it, Raiders. What do you got? Oh.
Through 60 years, the Raiders have had big moments.
Oh, yeah.
New name, the Raiders.
Shell has won.
Moments that have cemented legacies and defined a brand.
Yeah, losing.
January 22nd, 2020. A day to remember.
Really?
Inspired by our legends of the past and our leaders of tomorrow.
I'm sorry.
How about those Raiders, man?
In a city that shines brighter than most. And an iconic franchise ready for the biggest stage. It all happens here.
Las Vegas. Henderson.
whatever you do, just don't tell anybody else. Because what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Like, what was the last great Raiders thing that even happened? Seriously. Well, give it to me.
Cliff Branch.
It's been a while.
Yeah. You cannot tell me an iconic Raiders moment in the past decade.
The only reason one for them was signing, you know, John Gruden to a 10-year contract. That's about it.
That's it?
That's it. What else?
Seriously, give me something. They lost their last home game. They lost the last game as the Oakland Raiders here in Denver. They were booed off their own field. They played in a crap hole stadium.
The new stadium looks like a Roomba.
The new stadium looks awesome.
It's like the Death Star.
Yeah. But what are
they? They're bringing the black hole. Did you see that? They're trying to recreate the black hole in Vegas.
Spiky shoulder pads and all.
Well, good for them.
Are they going to provide the makeup
right
for the fans?
The makeup room. Where's the styrofoam?
They got professional
store?
Makeup artists.
Right. Well, it is Vegas. I mean, you probably could come up with it. The tradition of the Raiders. Like what? Like when? When is that moment? Seriously, what's the last great Raiders moment?
In the 90s when they're battling the Broncos, right?
Howie Long was part of the team at the time.
What was the last Super Bowl the Raiders were in?
Against when Gruden was facing his old team in San Diego.
Gruden.
When he was a head coach for the Tampa. What, 2003 maybe?
Well, there you go. If they made a Super Bowl, that's an iconic moment, I suppose. So
That's the last one.
Their last iconic moment was 17 years ago. Way to go. What a tradition and commitment to excellence.
The Raiders.
You're a terrible organization. Your owner's a weirdo and, you know, but they're in Vegas.
I read something that a few years ago, Aaron Rodgers could not, or was it Tony Romo? One of those two guys. They couldn't attend a fantasy football event in Las Vegas because it was like against NFL rules.
To
be a part of anything that is like sponsored by a casino. And now we've got a team in Las Vegas.
Got a team in Vegas. Got a hockey team in Vegas. Having the draft in Vegas.
I wonder if the league is going to change policy just for this.
I mean, I know I want to go to the Broncos game in Vegas.
Me too. Every year.
Hey, part of the new contract for all of us.
Richie.
We're going to Vegas.
Let's go. It is.
Assuming that we get new contracts, of course.
Must attend road trip. Yeah, going to Vegas is fun. I mean, Vegas or Oakland? Seriously?
Right.
I mean, is that even a conversation? It's going to be interesting for them. Because I bet they do well, but that, boy, oh boy, there are going to be a lot of visiting team fans there.
You got Richie Incognito in Vegas. Just think about that.
Richie Incognito.
Do you think it could be as bad as what the Chargers are dealing with in that soccer stadium? Like, but in a real big, giant stadium.
No, I don't think it'd be that bad because like 80% of the fans are like from the other team. Pittsburgh Steelers were playing like their theme music at like a Chargers game.
It was a home game for opponents.
Okay, but let's say on any given week, like when the Broncos play the Raiders. What percentage?
35 to 40.
That's a lot.
That's a ton.
That's a lot. That's enough to make noise. That's enough to cause false starts.
Yeah, like, especially because Broncos fans will know they can count on it once a year. Like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't we go to Vegas to go watch the Broncos play the Raiders?
You know what?
What was the reason again that we wouldn't do it?
Might be a smart investment to just buy a PSL in Las Vegas just to sell it to all the visiting fans that are coming.
No, it's going to be good for everybody. It's good for the Raiders because Oakland is a terrible place
to
be.
Yeah, it's going
to
be a must-see attraction.
Better for the players, right? Yeah. Would you really rather live in the Oakland area?
Or Vegas?
Or Vegas. Is that even a question?
No.
Stupid Raiders. All right, Justin Herbert, who...
Stupid Raiders.
As far as I can tell, Justin Herbert's the only good... I don't know. I guess Jalen Hurts is there. These Senior Bowl things, and we'll talk to Cecil in about an hour. Man, it is so hard to tell if anybody's good or bad or whatever. But what was interesting is Justin Herbert, everybody was saying that he's quiet, he's not much of a leader, and here's what he had to say to that.
What do you need to show on the field most?
I think people are worried about leadership and me being I would say that I'm not too quiet. Unfortunately, I'll talk to you here off. So there are these things that I want to be transparent with and give a good representation of myself.
How do you do?
There are questions that I've got.
He's just a laid back. He is a quiet dude. He is kind of an introvert.
But you can't be that type of guy at the quarterback position, though.
Daniel?
No, I mean, look, in your social life,
it seems tricky.
Off the field, if you want to be a quiet guy, that's okay. But if I'm looking at you as being my starting quarterback, and I'm looking to take you in the first round, I want to know that you can disseminate the play calls to the players, that they can look in the huddle and look in your eyes, and they know no matter what's happening, you can lead them. I don't want a quiet guy in the huddle. And I don't need a guy that needs to be pushed by other coaches to be that guy.
What if Justin Herbert is Eli Manning?
That would be
what
a
if
fantastic
Justin Herbert
career.
It's a potential Hall of Fame career.
Yeah.
Multiple playoff appearances and perhaps some championships mixed in with some, you know, rough spots along the way.
Well, see, I think you could be introverted. Like, there's a difference between being quiet in the huddle and being introverted. I don't mind. I don't mind you being quiet in the huddle. I've had a lot of quarterbacks that were quiet in the huddle. A matter of fact, there's something calming about you being quiet in the huddle, about the good moments, the bad moments. You just being, you just approach it all the same.
I think like Joe Montana would be considered quiet in the huddle.
Oh, I've had a lot of quarterbacks that are quiet in the huddle. Yeah, very few that are rah-rah guys. But I do think that it is a problem if you are introverted. Like you can be quiet in the huddle and that doesn't make you introverted.
Right.
You know, like right. Like it's tough to lead guys if you're introverted. Like what real leadership is, it's not in the huddle. It's not rah-rah speeches. It's the way the guys gravitate towards you in the lunchroom. It's the way the guys want to go out to dinner with you. It's the way the guys want to like Peyton Manning set a bar of excellence that I was terrified to not meet. And then whether that was in the weight room, whether that was in my diet, whatever it might be, you know, leadership is everything but words. Words are like the least attractive quality in leadership as far as I'm concerned.
But you can't be an introvert and then be a type of guy that attract others to you.
I agree.
You definitely have to have a little, you know, personality. And you talk about, you know, Peyton Manning. He was definitely one of those guys who commanded that everyone on that offense knows exactly what they need to do. But he still had a little personality where he could joke around with guys in the locker room.
Of course. And
he still had his guys on the side that were his guys that knew him better than anyone else. So when you look at Herbert, it's not just being able to, and we're talking about commanding the huddle, not that you're screaming in the huddle. Once again, the guys can look at you in a tough situation and know that, hey, listen, the same way they look at Drew Brees, they looked at Peyton Manning, they look at Tom Brady, to know that you can lead these guys, especially in a tough situation. That's what you're looking for.
Well, he's an interesting figure. This draft is fascinating. I saw a draft, a mock just yesterday, and it has Bryce Love going in the top 15 and has Eason up there.
I know, Daniel Jeremiah. He's very well respected also.
Yeah, he's got him going. I'm seeing, you know, Justin Herbert, you wait and see. There's a lot of vibe about who's going to give up what to go get Cincinnati's pick. Are you really going to let Justin Herbert slide if he's the next Eli Manning? Where are you going to go with Tua Tagovailoa? Will a guy like Love, who's at the Senior Bowl, will he make a big push? You know, if you need a quarterback, you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. What are you doing? Really? Are you still believing in Jameis Winston? If you're the Colts, do you really believe and Jacoby Brissett? Well, this is where the fun begins. And if Herbert's one of those guys, again, if you're the Denver Broncos, just know that Locke's your guy. But you got to know it. You can't have any doubts about it. We can't get into training camp this spring. I might be like, I don't know. Mm-mm. Forget it. The time is now to figure that out. Major League Baseball making maybe some big changes. Also, I got a little perspective on that Nolan Arenado, Jeff Bridges thing. Update on that coming up.
104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's D-Mac, Tyler, and Nick.
Getting more daylight every day, guys. Get a little bit more sunshine every day. This is the time it fools you here in Colorado when it's January and it's feeling kind of nice and the sun's out. Right?
This is
you see people on those golf courses as you drive home and
not much snow this winter.
Boy, yeah, I know. There's reports of that it's down and you really think like, hey, that's over, winter, whatever. And then we'll get 9 feet in March.
April, you always get a good one, too. You April, always get one you always really get, good just hammer you do. In April.
You do. Happens every year.
Do you shovel your own driveway?
I don't have to because I'm fortunate with the direction that my driveway faces, meaning when the sun comes out, it
so you're that
it.
Lazy? You're Hold that on. Lazy that you wait for the snow, you wait for the sun?
But I have a wife.
You'll wait two and a half weeks for it to melt?
No, because I have a wife who is obsessed with shoveling snow.
Oh, even better. Wait, even better.
You allow
you
your
wife
to,
on it.
To go outside and do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, good.
Right. I can't get away with that. So the question is, do I shovel snow? And the answer is yes. Because if I don't, my wife who's obsessed with it will make me feel like a rotten little turd. So yeah. Yes, I do shovel snow, even though.
Who doesn't shovel?
Well, me. I shovel. I'm guilty.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I don't shovel. I've got other tools, but I mean, I handle it myself. I handle it.
You have a snowblower?
No.
What do you handle your?
Yeah. How do you?
What do you handle then?
You got a plow.
Oh, wow.
How long is your driveway?
Not long enough to need a plow.
But you just got a plow just for the sake of it.
I've got a riding lawnmower, and so why wouldn't I buy a plow if I have a riding lawnmower?
So you have a plow that you put on your riding lawnmower.
Yeah, I put some chains on the lawnmower. I get some weight on it.
Do you really have that big of a driveway? Seriously?
I just told you it wasn't necessary.
Do you go to your neighbors?
I do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm All that right. guy.
So you just like doing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's like...
It's fun.
Yeah, I'm stuck inside in a snowstorm. I want to go outside and... Do testosterone
right,
things.
You have caveman fun.
Yeah.
Captain Caveman Tyler Columbus is out to...
And then I laugh at my neighbors that are out there with the shovel.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, how you doing, man?
Which direction
Crazy blizzard out, isn't it?
Which direction does your driveway face?
It is... So my driveway is on the south side of my home, and it's got a totally clear shot. East to west. So, I mean, it gets the sun rising. It gets the sun setting.
I mean, too.
It gets a good 12 hours of sun every single day.
There's no reason for you to do any of that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, but I do because I'm a man.
Oh, okay. And men just do stupid, unnecessary things.
Well, isn't that like the bylaws of
it
being
is,
a man?
It is part of it, yes.
That's what I thought.
Rob Manfred. Oh, before we get into this, the Nolan stuff. I believe that, you know, at first with the Jeff, remember the caller yesterday who was like yelling at us and our homework and this, that, the other.
Yeah, thing. I had nightmares about him.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was like, hey, you didn't read the ESPN thing. The ESPN thing and some of the reports are painting Nolan's discontent just based on inactivity in the offseason. And as we talked about at great lengths yesterday, that just didn't seem like enough to use the term disrespect. So over the past 24 hours, I believe that there was a verbal confrontation between Breidich and Nolan that got personal. I do believe that happened. And yes, it probably was the reason why it got personal and all that stuff. Was based in the fact that frustration about the roster and where the team's going and
well, there's origins to everything. So yes. there's origins to any fight, right?
Right. So it's not that Nolan's not frustrated with that whole situation. It's just that I think what happened was a much more like confrontational situation that has led to this moment. So that's what I believe.
Have you verified that? Or like is that like something...
I believe it.
You believe it?
I believe it.
Mm.
Do you feel as though these two can actually...
I really believe it.
...get together and move past this? And just kind of put this behind them?
I do not think you can get past this.
So this is going to be something
that
lurches over the shoulder all season long?
I've heard the, like, get them in a room, and I just don't think it's...
You don't think is that simple?
Well...
I don't think it's that simple, and I don't think it's that necessary.
You know what is simple? You know what is simple? If there was ever a doubt of whether you should trade him, that's long gone. First off, there never really should have been a doubt. But there is zero chance that Nolan Arenado does not opt out. He's going to opt out, okay?
In 2021.
Correct.
Yeah.
He is going to opt out. And so you would be the most irresponsible manager of any club's history.
Yeah.
If you knew for a fact a guy was going to opt out and you could get the value like you could for Nolan,
yeah,
that would be the most irresponsible decision you could possibly make.
So I think the decision is pretty simple at this point. These guys are going to hate each other. The degree that other guys dislike the GM is probably going to be more based on their own individual dealings and deals with that GM, not how Nolan feels about him. I've had it at work. I'm sure you guys have had it too, where people that I like and respect have issues with other people who are my bosses. But I don't have those issues. I get where they're coming from, but I don't let it impact how I feel about it. It's my own sort of thing. And I think this is what's going to happen. So I don't know if it's really that big of a deal. I think FanFest on Saturday is going to be...
That's going to be interesting.
Perhaps a
for
little,
sure.
A little awkward. We'll see how that goes. Have fun at FanFest, everybody. But that being said, I think what we have is a situation where the plan that was put in place a couple years ago, we're still moving forward with it. You don't have much of a choice. I thought it was a good plan a couple years ago. Didn't work out this year. It'll have a shot this year. And if it doesn't work out, we'll
wait,
know.
What do you mean by that? What do you like? What plan are you referring to?
Developing starters from your system, spending high-priced dollars on relievers, buoying your team with high-priced position players like Charlie Blackmon and Nolan Arenado, okay, and giving it a whirl. Now, it depends on things. Your homegrown starters have to be good. Like Kyle Freeland has got to win you 16, 17 games.
But we would be in agreement, right, that there is no point of delaying the inevitable. Just do it, and do it now. Just do it.
No, I would delay the inevitable.
Why?
Because maybe you can squeeze out a year. Maybe something special can happen this year.
But he's going to opt out anyway.
In 2021. So I would give it the first half of this year, and let's see where we're at.
No,
I would give it up until the trade deadline. And you know what? If it's falling apart...
I suppose there's not a rush. I mean...
If it's not working, if it's falling apart, if it's not working out, and the trade deadline's coming up...
Trade him at that point.
Sure.
I think I'd trade him now, but there isn't a rush.
What's the point?
The only point is to remove, just remove it.
Well,
be done with it.
But then again, it goes to how much does it matter? And if we're saying here it doesn't really matter that much, it's relationship.
It only matters in this way. If Nolan's upset with Breitage kind of filters into the clubhouse, where he becomes problematic.
I just said I don't think. So what? He's going to be moping? He's going to be
he may not be moping, but he may just kind of say things to other guys to create somewhat of a distraction.
So what if he does?
When it gets to this level, it can become contagious, and that is dangerous. So
then you'll know. But you don't have a choice. So listen, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, they made the playoffs before last year, 2 out of 3 years. They were in the playoffs. It was exciting. They kind of stunk it up in the playoffs, but I mean, they were there.
That was then. This is now. Things have changed. If you don't have the pitching, it's going to make it that much more difficult.
That's the issue. Things really haven't changed. I mean,
from a personnel standpoint, of course.
Right.
Yes.
The team really has not changed from where it was like 2 years ago when they were in the playoffs. That's the frustration. I mean, it hasn't really. I mean, yes, there are changes. DJ LeMahieu's not here. Adam Ottavino isn't here. You've brought in, other guys that you need to have produce. Listen, this could all be a total sinking ship disaster, all right? I know that it could be that way. But the more that I dug into the story, like after the show, the more I realized there's just not a lot of other choices here. There's no better offers on the table. You're not going to give him away at a discount. He's not going to, not try. I don't think Nolan has it in his DNA to, not give it his best effort. He's too good.
Well, I guess to that point, a texter sent this in, and this is a really good point. He said the market value is probably going to be better at the trade deadline with the team. If you're in a chase for the pennant, of course. Of course that creates more value. But there is something about a deadline that just creates value. A deadline. Friday. Guys, it's Friday. Make an offer or you don't. Somebody already made the offer, but Friday it ends.
But if he's going to opt out and it's 2021... Wouldn't you just give it a shot and see what you got this year? See how it goes?
I think it's dangerous. It's a dangerous game to play. That is that type of problem.
All right.
This is not your average problem.
Here's where I am with Nolan. I want to get every last single second moment I can that makes sense out of Nolan. And if it's not working out, then yes, I'm more reasonable. I don't hang on to him until you get absolutely nothing and he's gone. But right now, we're there. And I don't think it matters if they hate each other and they don't like each other and they're upset. I don't know if it matters.
Yeah, but it only matters if Nolan becomes the type of guy. He's already put it out publicly. you know, how he feels, that he feels betrayed.
It was surprising that he did that.
Yeah,
it's not really in his nature.
He starts now talking to other guys, rallying them to his cause.
I don't think he's going to do that.
It's a possibility.
I don't think it matters. Who cares? If you're Charlie Blackman, you don't know what Charlie Blackman's getting? Charlie Blackman's getting like $21 million a year for the next 4 years. What is Chuck not going to try?
No, but that's the thing that makes the situation so interesting.
What are you going to do if you're Ian Desmond? You've been underperforming and you make tons of money. Daniel Murphy, you think he's going to be a bad egg? No. The amount of, again, it's because baseball is such a individual team sport. This is just so different than, I'll give you one, when T.J. Ward was basically flat-out lied to about being traded, that created all sorts of problems inside the locker room because they didn't trust Vance Joseph anymore. Am I right?
No, you're absolutely true.
But that can't happen in baseball.
What if there are some guys, and I don't really know this, I'm just speculating, on the Rockies team that are great friends with Nolan and feel as though the team is not doing right by them, not doing right by him, and they just may say, you know what, Nolan?
I think at the end of the day, what D-Mac is saying, and this is true for football and it's true for every sport, at the end of the day, you got a paycheck that you got to go earn.
That's right.
Right? And you're going to go out there and you're going to play. Whether you're happy or not, you're going to go out there and play.
Right.
But, you know, I think maybe the hard part for Nick and I to associate here is that, like, in football, man, if something like this becomes contagious, you've lost the entire organization.
Correct.
You've lost the entire organization.
It's the big difference between football and baseball.
That might be something that is hard for us to differentiate from, because in baseball, I could see it. Every single person on that team is basically an individual entity. They're pretty much their own entity.
Yeah.
You know, that is a different feeling.
It's just a different deal. Like, Trevor Story is going to try to hit the ball hard every single time, no matter what.
Yeah.
He's going to field the ball great every single time. And by the way, he doesn't need you to communicate with him in order for him to field the ball or hit a baseball. Whereas you need your secondary to
want to talk.
You need your offensive line. You need everybody together. These guys,
it's such an isolated sport.
It is. It's a unique deal. And look at the money they're making. Come on. Oh, you don't like Jeff Breidich? Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, well, go home with your $35 million.
Right?
Yeah. So then you get your Porsche and just drive off.
Right.
I don't like this Porsche. I'll buy a new one.
Right. And by the way,
used to do that.
I was talking to some people after the show yesterday. The it's not a division between like position players and pitchers. It's just that they're in different worlds. They're in such different worlds that it literally doesn't matter what their relationship is. So if you have 13 pitchers on a 25-man roster and 12 position players, right? These 12 guys don't give a crap about those 13 guys. It doesn't matter. As long as you do your job, as long as you do what you're supposed to do.
Man, you made baseball seem so selfish.
It's unbelievably selfish.
No wonder D-Mac loves it.
Yeah.
KKFN, KKFN HD1 Longmont Denver. It's 5 o'clock.
Yeah. Thank you, Brittany.
Welcome to the show. Really quick on the baseball stuff too. Rob Manfred is going to, in spring training, use robots and lasers to call balls and strikes.
Good for him.
They're going to try it out. He is much more progressive. He has said that this is basically the future, and it's coming.
Why, though?
It is coming.
Why is he doing that, though, out of curiosity? Like, what is there an agenda behind that? Is he trying to push the narrative?
Good question. According to MLB, he was doing an interview on Fox Business Network, of all places, that a camera-based system, we believe, over the long haul is going to be more accurate. It will reduce controversy in the game and be good for the game. He is 100% correct. Lasers. Military.
On sharks.
God. Family. The four pillars of successful life.
And also a baby shark with a laser on its head.
If you had baby shark with a laser on its head.
Yes. I could take over the world.
Who was a colonel.
Mm-hmm.
And had a great family relationship.
Yeah.
So how do they plan to communicate this with the umpire?
Yeah, You have a little earpiece. Or you have a headset. Hey, you could see, like, I've seen, like, soccer referees. We've seen referees, NFL referees right now. They wear little headsets with microphones. It's no big deal. It's easy to do. And you do need somebody to hold the baseballs behind the catcher.
Well, it turns out that baseball has this crazy technology that involves, like, a device that you can push a button.
Yeah.
And it, like, vibrates. And
isn't that incredible?
It, like, does crazy things.
Oh, here's...
Like, it can vibrate on a different human being that is, like hundreds of yards away.
Right. It's amazing.
Dude, it's unreal.
You know what they're really going to do? If it's a strike, they're going to bang the trash can one time. If it's a ball, they're going to bang it twice.
They might use smoke signals.
The Astros have devised that. Oh, by the way, they've come out and said we're not going to take away any of the World Series from the Red Sox or the Astros.
Because what's the point?
Baseball has been cheating on variety of levels since the day baseball was invented.
No wonder D-Mac loves the sport.
I tell you what, it's selfish.
The more I look at this game,
it's based on cheating, and they're introducing lasers.
You're absolutely right.
Short guys can succeed, you know?
Great sport for short guys.
Yeah. Chuck, never mind.
The more I dig into the baseball, I learn more about you, D-Mac.
Well, hopefully you learn good things because it's the greatest sport in the world.
Well, you just said they cheat a lot.
They do cheat a lot. They're trying to use it. If you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Oh, see, there it is,
you know,
right there.
You know,
there's that mentality.
I don't actually advocate that, but that's, you know.
Oh, I totally do. Yeah, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. Yep, I tell my kids it every day.
How often do you hold?
You know, before
how
bed.
How many plays do you hold? Of 70 plays, how many do you hold?
We've got a great routine before bed. We read a book. We sit down, we say our prayers, okay?
Yes.
And then I give them a kiss, and I say, and remember, if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
There you go. Tell
your
kids every night.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that sounds great. I mean, that's awesome. So good for you.
Hey, I was thinking about the steroid thing that we were talking about yesterday and whether they should be involved in the Hall of Fame. Of course they should.
Of course.
Think about this for a second. Every single era of baseball has involved something.
Right.
What about all the junk ball pitchers?
Right.
Who used to have, they got something under their hat, and they're grabbing it all the time. You know?
Gaylord Perry's in the Hall of Fame. He was the biggest cheating, you know, spitballer of all time.
What about the pine tar halfway up the bat?
There you go.
You know?
Cork bats, pine tar, everything. Just let them all in.
Of course they should be in the Hall of Fame.
Right. They just cheated on a different level.
Yeah. It was just different cheating. It was the modern cheating.
Barry Bonds.
Cesspool of cheating.
It's just the sport. It's the way things are. And we're seeing another example with all this Astros stuff. It's just the way it goes. It's nothing different. It's the way baseball is.
By the way, I was watching the national championship game, and I can't remember who it was, but I swear there was a wide receiver that had, like, pine tar on his helmet, like the equivalent. Like, you know how baseball players will always, like grab their helmet or get a little extra stickiness?
Right, right.
There was a wide receiver that kept tapping the top of his head and, like, rubbing his hands, and then he'd pull his hands together, and he'd clap them, and he'd rub them together. And I was like, what is on top of your head right now?
It's science.
You got something you're cheating with? Isn't that a little bit suspicious?
Very.
Extremely.
It's the degree of acceptability of the cheating, I guess. Everybody's so outraged. I'm like, it shouldn't happen. Like, steroids shouldn't happen. Cork bats shouldn't happen.
But it was allowed in baseball.
You shouldn't be able to throw spitballs. You should allow players of all races to participate in the game. There are so many things that shouldn't happen that have happened. What are we supposed to do here? If we really had issues, man, it would just ruin sports, period. I don't know, man. There's a certain, like, when you realize something's wrong, you've got to correct it because it's not right. It's not the right thing to do. But you also have to have, you have to realize that people are going to continue to try to get over on the game. It's life.
Yeah.
It stinks.
If I can find an advantage, people try to find advantages.
But it changes things from a fan perspective. If you're rooting for a particular player or ball club and you are an aspiring coach or you're coaching youth sports and you're trying to do the things the right way, but the professional level, they are condoning or even promoting cheating. It's like, what do you tell your kids as you're bringing them up?
It's tricky. There's fuzzy lines. I hope you teach them the right thing.
Mama Columbus was really mad at me last time I said that if you're not cheating, you're not trying on air.
I can't blame her.
I wonder what she's gonna do to me.
Well, I don't know.
Check your phone. See if she's...
Does she realize you mix it in with the prayers?
Well, it's more of a lifestyle. Sometimes
this PSA by Tyler Columbus.
Lessons in life that I've learned about how to get ahead.
I would really, really like tomorrow to see a video of you wrapping up prayers with that line with your kids. Everybody's down, you know.
Dear Lord. Forgive us of our sins. We love you, and we thank you so much for this beautiful family.
Thank you so much.
Please help us to realize any possible advantage that we can gain in life.
Huh?
And expose that.
What?
Yeah.
What, Dad?
We love you. Never mind.
Okay.
Let my kids, Lord, let my kids be nothing like me.
The other news, a couple of news things today. Eli Manning is shutting it down on Friday. Eli Manning in the Hall of Fame? Yes, no?
Yeah, he'd get in.
He should. You know, the record is crazy. Do you know what his record is? His all-time record?
I do not.
Nick?
No, I don't.
Any guesses?
Well, from what you're saying, I'm going to guess it's pretty close to 500.
On the dot.
Is it really?
117 and 117.
No way.
On the dot.
Oh, wow.
That doesn't sound like a Hall of Fame career when you're just looking at wins and losses.
He's got two Super Bowls.
And
that's the thing that's going to push him over the top.
And he's got the background. And he is a Hall of Famer.
He's Manning.
In my mind, he's a Hall of Famer.
He's a Manning. He didn't want to go to the Chargers, right? And the fact that you beat Tom Brady, who was arguably the best quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, twice.
Twice. So he's going to get in.
On, by the way, two pretty, the Manningham one and then the David Tyree one, two amazing plays.
Yes.
You know,
clutch.
That he was a gargantuan part of. I don't know, man. Like, can you win? Was he the MVP in both of those?
Don't know.
I know he was the MVP of one, for sure, 100%, because I was there at the MVP press conference. I don't know if he was the MVP of both.
I don't know.
I would have to say he is, but
he was the MVP of both. Okay. I mean,
two-time Super Bowl MVP.
Come on.
He has the resume. It's going to get him in.
And you played forever in one organization. You're in. You're in. I mean, maybe you're not in first ballot.
But you're in.
You're in.
You're part of the club.
You're in.
And but you guys would trade him for a second rounder. Not that I don't remember things.
Well, I would trade him. I'm not going to back away from that.
What do you mean, you think?
Well, he was a number one overall pick. Maybe you should recap this. So you're saying what?
The question was, Eli Manning, 24 years old.
Okay, so he's with the Giants. He's in his third year.
Yep. His worth to the New York Giants. If somebody were to offer him a trade, and otherwise, and this is all tying back into the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow and what it would take to really trade to go get the number one pick. You know, like what is it worth to you? If you had Eli Manning at 25 years old, what would it take for you to trade him is the question. I'm saying
multiple first round picks.
Oh, multiple and players and something. I mean, it's got to be franchise changing.
Yes.
You got a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah.
That's not going away for a second.
And he was the number one overall pick to start with.
Oh, I thought you were in agreement on that one.
Maybe I wasn't paying attention, but it would take multiple first round picks for me to trade him. Nick?
How often do you not pay attention?
What time is it?
Hey, I'm still staying where I was before. I'm not giving up a first rounder for Eli Manning. I'm not. I'm not going to move Budge off of that.
Goo!
So
I don't know, man. You can find a Hall of Fame quarterback. All right, is Joe Burrow profiling to be a Hall of Fame quarterback?
You have no reach. Look, man, like that's an insane reach. And this is why I hate player comparisons. I used to fight with Cecil Lammy all the time going back in the day when he'd be comparing a draft prospect to a current NFL player. And I'm like, stop. Just don't compare him to an NFL player.
Okay.
So like in premise, I hate this question. Are we saying he's on that track? Like, no, that's idiotic.
Right,
I'll give you this.
Is it fair to say that if you get chosen as the number one overall pick, you should be on a track, period, to be a Hall of Fame player?
No, because just because you're drafted in the first round, think about
number
what that,
one overall pick.
Think about what that means. That means the team that is selecting you, they're taking you number one overall because the rest of their roster isn't that great. Your success as a quarterback depends not just on your skill set, but who's calling the plays and the other personnel around you on the offense and defensive side of the ball. So is it a shoo-in that you're drafted for number
one
overall?
Didn't say shoo-in. Said, are you on track to be a number one?
You have by far the best opportunity of anybody in your draft class.
I mean,
but you're the best player in your draft class.
I say no because there's so many dynamics that factor into how the first 3 years of your career actually go.
I'd say this. If you go in the first round, there is a projection that you're a 10-year NFL player, period. If you go in the top 10, I think there's a fair expectation that you should have one of the best careers in the history of your club.
I would dial that down to the top five. And I think that's a true statement.
And but, you know, we can go back and look at it over time, I suppose. That's a lot of work.
There's not going to be 10 Hall of Fame players in any given class, right?
Of course not. But I didn't say there.
No, I know you didn't.
I didn't say there is or there's a guarantee. I'm saying what is projected.
That's my expectation.
If you're in the top 10, you are the best quarterback or the best running back or the best offensive lineman or the best safety or the best whatever. You're a top 10 guy, you know? And I mean, maybe there's more than one of you chosen in your particular position group. But gee whiz, I mean, you know, you're that guy, or at least you project to be that guy. So if you're a number one overall, Eli was a number one overall guy, Peyton was a number one overall guy. I mean, technically, Phillip Rivers was a number one overall guy, too, by the way. That was a whole trade sort of kookiness thing. I mean, these are highly regarded guys who have all had careers that are going to put them, you know, in Canton.
Yeah, but you still have other guys who were drafted in the first round.
I got it.
Who did not reach that pinnacle.
Well, of course, because there's no guarantees. There's zero guarantees. But I'll bet you, and I haven't done research on this, but I'll bet you dimes to donuts. Is that an expression?
Sure. I think it's dimes to dollars.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah. Maybe I'm just saying.
Are you hungry right now?
Dimes to donuts.
Donuts. Not good.
Dimes to
but
dollars.
But I'll bet you anything, the likelihood of a guy going to a successful Hall of Fame career does add up more to guys who are drafted high than low. I bet you there's more guys in the top five that eventually make their way into Canton than guys who are in the fourth round, you know, that sort of thing.
More chances, more opportunities because of your draft position. That's it.
Yeah, so Joe Burrow. See, this is tricky because is Justin Herbert really one of those guys or not? And teams do reach. When they need a quarterback, man, they do reach. Because the pitfalls of taking a guy in the second, third, fourth round, man, it's epic. You know, you just are. It's a terrible plan if you need a quarterback to wait that long. And we'll see what Cincinnati does. Do not forget they are the Bengals.
Richie really wants you to answer the phone.
Oh, what's going on, Richie?
Really wants you to answer the
what's
phone.
What's happening? Is there some frustration here?
No, I just want to let you guys know that per Mike Kliss, after 8 years as the Broncos salary cap guru and contract negotiator, Mike Sullivan will not be returning to the team.
Whoa!
As his contract is expiring.
Oh, was that a look at the phone? Got it.
Whoa.
Mike Sullivan.
This is a bombshell. They're letting Mike Sullivan go? Holy cow.
Capologist.
Wow. Hey, man, this is something here. Mike Sullivan has been kind of the architect of the Bronx. How long has he been there? What's the
8 years.
8 years.
Dude, that's huge news.
Contract guys are some of the most valuable members of the entire organization. You know what? Really, they are like are way up there on that list.
They're letting Mike Sullivan go. That is a gargantuan change.
I wonder why.
Me too.
I wonder why. Why? What's going on? Why?
You know, it's Mike Sullivan that tells John Elway.
Is this about Joe Flacco? Is it like who wanted to restructure Flacco?
I'll tell you this. I know Kirk Cousins wasn't going to get guaranteed money from the Denver Broncos like he was from Minnesota, which more or less ended that free agency bid for the Broncos.
You think that's Mike Sullivan's deal?
Oh, what do you think? John Elway's breaking down salary cap stuff? Come on, man. Really? Seriously? Do you guys, keep it real here? You think John is in there with a...
Obviously he's not.
Like an accountant with like the green shady thing?
But
and
this,
like
this is why Mike Sullivan's position was so important.
Oh, it's huge. Well, Troy's here. Wow. Troy Rank from Denver 7 joins us, courtesy of Tranny Law. Did you hear this news about Mike Sullivan not coming back?
Yeah, I just heard that he's not returning. His contract is expiring, so they're not renewing his contract. That stinks. I think Mike's done a great job in a tough situation after they won the Super Bowl.
Dude, what's going on? Why? Down.
Well, I don't know. It literally is just happening
just
in the last 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's just all coming down in the last 5 minutes. You know, I'll try to, you know, dig into it more. But Mike has done a tremendous job. His job got much more difficult after the Super Bowl trying to manage bigger contracts. But, yeah, it's an interesting move. I mean, he's been their salary cap guy since 2012 and had a remarkable career as both a college player and a player agent. Well-respected in league circles. So we'll see where they go from here. But, Mike is not coming back.
I know you just said that you don't know why, so I'm going to ask you a different way why. Has there ever been, like, any sort of rumors about unhappiness between him, John Elway, whomever? I mean, this is, like, the last guy I would have thought of.
Yeah, no, he's always been at every game, road game, home game. You know, I'd see him in the press box, home games, road games. He'd be walking the sidelines before the game with Matt Russell and John Elway and that crew. The only issues I've ever heard about Mike was that he drove a hard bargain with agents. You know, I mean, he was a guy who would, you know, wouldn't blink in negotiations, would really drive a hard bargain. He was a former agent himself, so then he saw it from both sides. But I never heard of friction between he and John Elway regarding that. So, that, I mean, we'll see as they report it out if that's the issue or if they just decided it was time for a change, after 8 years?
This tells
8 years since 2012.
This tells me there are deals that he championed or ways to go about things that just didn't work out. That's how I...
Yeah, no question. There's got to be, is it the Flacco deal, the restructuring there? There could be he could look at a couple of deals to where maybe they're putting the onus on him. I don't, you know, it's always hard to tell on those contracts. How much is it negotiated by Elway or is it Mike then going to John? So, yeah, I mean, anytime some stuff fails, you can be blamed in football. I mean, that's just the way the professional sports work. But I just know from my own personal dealings with Mike Sullivan, a total pro, I mean, I can't imagine he won't bounce back on his feet somewhere because he's been around in the league basically for a better part of 2.5 decades.
Detroit, Shelby Harris signed with Drew Rosenhaus, who's been known to sign a lot of high-profile clients. How do you think this changes his market value, especially after having one of his best seasons as a pro?
Well, I think it decreases the likelihood he returns to the Broncos because you don't hire Drew Rosenhaus to take the first deal offered. You hire Drew Rosenhaus to get the most money. And the most recent example of that is Brandon Marshall switched agents, and he got the most money from the Broncos. And he switched to Drew Rosenhaus because I asked him when it went down. He's like, Rosenhaus promised me he was going to get me this deal. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. I mean, he's got a stable of clients where he can certainly say that. And not, a handful of months later, he did get him that deal. So Shelby Harris in changing to Rosenhaus is telling you he's looking to get the top dollar. And that might be in Denver. I would say, it's a little less likely, but it just doesn't. And again, you have to remember with Harris, he's bounced around the league. He wasn't a high draft choice. So it makes sense for him. The window to earn in the NFL, as you and Tyler know, is so narrow. And he's coming off essentially a career season. It makes sense to hire Rosenhaus. It's not great news for the Broncos.
All right, baseball. Talk to us about your interactions with Nolan. Let us know what we should know here.
Yeah, I mean, you saw my Denver 7 story where he said specifically that that Jeff Breidich has been disrespectful. He felt like he's been crossed too many times, that he just keeps his mouth shut and plays baseball. And he feels like the organization has disrespected him. And some people ask, well, how could they disrespect him? They gave him an 8-year, $206 million contract. The reason he signed, there's sometimes a perception with star players where the organization's like, well, we gave you this money, like you owe us. No, the player earned it. Nolan would have gotten that money from anyone. He's a top 10 player in the league. And I think that's where the relationship starts to get sideways. Especially when I covered the Rockies, they pay a star, the team starts to underperform, and then they go to the star and say, I want you to do more. I want, and in baseball, as you know, DMAC, it's a bunch of solo performances in a concert. So to go to a third baseman and say, you need to do more, which that was part of the confrontation at the end of the season, was Breidich, from my sources, saying, you need to do more in terms of off the field and leading and that. Well, Nolan is, I just hit 41 home runs, 120 plus RBIs, won another Gold Glove. He didn't tell me this, but I'm telling you, as I've seen this play out, position players are like, that's weird. I'm not in the bullpen. That's funny. I'm not a pitching coach. I'm not the one with a 7 ERA. getting my ears boxed every night. All I do is go out and play, you know. So that's part of it. Is and Jeff Breidich honestly has a reputation in the industry and with those and several players I've dealt with and talked to about making everyone feel like they're beneath him. That's a problem. And you can say you don't need interpersonal skills. Well, at some point you do, and it has to be collaborative effort if you're going to reach your potential as a team. And if you have arrogance and you treat your employees poorly, whether they're making $260 million or minimum, eventually that comes to the surface. And that's what's happened with Nolan.
So are these red flags that say the Rockies should move on from Jeff Breidich?
Yeah, listen, if Mike Sullivan, you're going to pick one contract out and his contract doesn't get renewed, there's five of the Rockies. Shaw, McGee, Davis, Murphy, Desmond. Those are all on Jeff Breidich. That's another reason players get upset. If you blame the players for everything, then as a general manager who has arguably five of the worst, like 10 contracts in baseball right now, you have to fall on the sword once in a while. You can't take credit for all success, and then as soon as everyone fails, you blame the players. They feel that. So they won't. Their ownership's perspective on this has always been to support front office over players. I would suggest that Dick Monfort would want to get involved and try to smooth this relationship out. But honestly, usually when it's reached this point, as it did with Tulowitzki, they've passed the point of no return. I believe he will be traded. I just don't think it'll be soon. It'll be during the season.
Great stuff. We appreciate it. Thank you, Troy.
Thanks, bud.
Yep, see you.
Troy Rank from Denver 7, courtesy of Tranny Law.
That was pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
That was strong.
Something to think about for the Rockies. Well, how about the melee with Kansas and Kansas State? Wasn't that fun? What should the consequences of that be? We'll get there next.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.